Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This episode of the Analyst Inside Cricket is brought to you by IG, official partners of England Cricket, and the place to go if you want to get on the front foot and manage your own investments. IG's platform allows you to invest in thousands of international shares and exchange-traded funds, as well as a number of fully managed, ready-made portfolios if you'd rather leave it to the experts. To find out more, go to ig.com/investing, remembering that the value of your investments may fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you deposit.
I thought I'd start today's podcast with one of the first renditions of God Save the King in this country. It, of course, preceded the start of play here at the Oval on this third day of this final Test match. Of course, we've lost the first 2 days, one to the weather and the second one to all the ramifications of Her Majesty's death on Thursday night. So this was the third day, and it was actually a very moving experience listening to this rendition of God Save the King at what I suppose you could say is almost his home ground. Prince Charles, this is his part of his estate here at the Oval. It's now been handed to his son, Prince William. And it was a fine occasion listening to everybody singing their hearts out, in respect of the new king. And I say it was a moving day. It was also a moving day on the field too, a fast moving day, because we had 272 runs scored in the day's paper. 17 wickets fell in only 69 overs, and South Africa were bowled out for 118. England in reply took a 36 run lead, but they lost 7 wickets in the process. So it was really cricket on speed. Now, Simon Mann is away this week, so replacing him, I'm in the very capable hands of Simon Wild, cricket correspondent of the Sunday Times and also a renowned author who's produced a book over the last couple of years about England's Test career, England in Test cricket since the 1870s, and also now a sequel, The Tour, which is England away from home in all that time as well. And Simon's here now. You've just filed your report for the Sunday Times. What was the thrust of it?
Well, I mean, this was, as you've just been alluding to, this has been a day like no other, really, in England Test cricket. I don't think we've experienced anything like it, although we've probably watched hundreds of Test matches between us involving England. But the occasion before play with the anthem was extremely moving, as you've said, and then we had a day of high drama on the pitch. So the sort of challenge of any piece, I suppose, today you were writing about was to bring these two themes together. And it was an extraordinary day. Very exciting on the pitch. I think the players delivered the entertainment that the spectators would have wanted to see. Ben Stokes has always talked about his team being a group of entertainers, and that's exactly what they delivered. And England are on top, not by much, but they are on top. So I think everyone who's come today, 28,000, will have gone home very happy.
You can hear, actually, the people still discussing the day's play. There's still a few people lingering here at the Oval. The TVs are recording the highlights, links and so on. So that's the background noise. Actually, I spend a bit of time up in that stand up at the far side there, the MAR Galdhari stand. He was a benefactor of Surrey, for those who wonder why it's named after him. It's the new stand to the left of the pavilion, and it's a nice atmosphere there, actually, with bars at the back and restaurants and obviously a lot of people underneath it as well, getting stuck into the beers. It was almost like a beer match in a way. I mean, there were so many shots played.
It was crazy, and I thought England did really well to bowl South Africa out for 118. And we know how England play. They're very attacking. But you did think at times, could they not just sit back a little bit and just... They got an advantage. Just grind out a 100-run lead and you've sort of got the game. But they couldn't do it. And Ben Stokes had a... You know, he played a couple of extraordinary shots and got out driving, caught a slip. And then Ollie Pope was out shortly afterwards. And that was the point when the game sort of swung back into the balance a little bit. But Folkes and Broad added a few runs at the end. So England are ahead, but... Yeah, there were some rash shots, but England don't play any other way at the moment. They just go for it hell for leather.
Which I suppose is entertaining, and it almost guarantees a result. They obviously won a good toss, although actually the toss was 2 days ago, wasn't it? Before play started on the first day, which were then abandoned for the day. And we saw, actually for the second time in a row, Ollie Robinson given the new ball ahead of Stuart Broad. That happened at Old Trafford as well. My piece in the Times tomorrow, the Sunday Times tomorrow, is also about Robinson. And I actually thought he bowled superbly today. I thought that first 8-over spell, Stokes kept him going into the second hour of play. I think he stopped at about 12:30, actually, and people talked a little bit about his stamina being a bit suspect, but I thought he sustained his pace pretty well. He certainly sustained his accuracy superbly. I only counted one half volley in 8 overs that was drilled for 4 by Marco Jansen, but apart from that, I mean, he just asked a question every ball and took those 3 or 4 early wickets, 4 of the 6 that fell. But despite his excellence, one has to say South African batting was pretty ropey. Would you agree?
Yes. I mean, they've been struggling for quite a long time now, a couple of years since. They had a great generation of batsmen, didn't they? Going back, Graham Smith, Hashim Amla, people like this, AB de Villiers. They're long gone, and they've never quite found a middle order to replace it. People have come and gone a little bit, and someone like Aidan Markram looked quite good for a while. He's now been dropped, lack of form. They're unfortunate that Rassie van der Dusen is injured. But they just can't produce the big scores. I mean, they were blown away at Old Trafford twice. Ollie Robinson bowled well there. And it was the same again today, really. Losing Dean Elgar in the first couple of overs was a big blow. He's the sort of rock of their batting lineup. So, yeah, they would have been very disappointed. And this is why if England get any sort of lead, they have got a lead, you'd fancy England to win because you don't know where the South African runs are going to come from.
Yes, I looked at their experience or lack of, and the top 7, only one player, Elgar, who you mentioned, has played more than 10 tests. So clearly there is a lack of experience there. Were you surprised about Robinson getting the new ball ahead of Broad?
Well, he did it at Old Trafford.
Were you surprised there?
Yes. Well, I thought it was striking, and it's to Robinson's great credit. I mean, Robinson's had a short England career so far, and there's been a lot of talk about his fitness, but actually when he plays, no one can argue with his quality because he is so good. He's so accurate. Keeps asking the right questions. Broad's played, 150 test matches, but he's had to give way to a guy who frankly can bowl as well as Broad. And Broad bowled well today. He got 4 wickets. But Ollie Robinson deserves to take the new ball. And I think also he is good against the left-handers. And South Africa have now, in the way they've reconfigured their batting for this game, they've got 3 left-handers in the top 4 or 5. So it was the right thing, and it worked.
It's interesting, actually. I looked at the top career test averages of bowlers throughout history today, and Robinson's in the top 15, and the only modern player above him in the averages, but bowling averages, that has played actually in the last 60 years since Frank Tyson, who's in that list, is Kyle Jameson of New Zealand. And there's a common denominator there: very tall, very high actions, and getting that bit of extra bounce, but no good if you bowl too short. And both those bowlers, I mean, Jameson was outstanding in that World Test Championship final against India last year, has slightly gone off the ball and got injured, didn't he, in the series here this year. But both of them, I think, keep an admirably full length, which some short bowlers, I'm thinking someone like, for instance, Morney Morkel, tended to err on the slightly short side and got excited by the ball sailing through to the keeper head high, but it doesn't necessarily take wickets. Whereas Robinson, it seems to me, is really learning very fast about the right place to bowl.
Yeah, he's a very intelligent bowler, I think. I mean, I think James Kirtley's worked with him at Sussex, and he said, you know, he's got a sort of encyclopedic knowledge of batsmen and how to work them out. It's the sort of thing about, you know, Glenn McGrath, people like that. They just there's great students, I suppose, of their art. And I think Ollie Robinson, although he's relatively new to Test cricket, just comes into the international arena with that sort of brain, really, and I think it suits him well. And I'm struggling to think of a game where he's bowled badly, really. I mean, he's had the games where he's got injured, but actually bowling badly when he's fit to bowl, can't think of one, really.
What do you make of, as we hear an aeroplane go over, so sorry about the interruption there, but what do you make of the story about Chris Martin giving him the book about breathing?
Well, it's very flattering to Ollie Robinson that Chris Martin has knows who he is and has, you know, but obviously thinks enough of him that he could pass on a book. But it's a nice little story and suggests that he's noticed that maybe Robinson's problems in Test cricket, which we sort of clumsily refer to as fitness, might actually be something a bit more like, not quite stage fright, but, you know, you've got to learn to breathe. Sachin Tendulkar used to talk about, I need to control my breathing when I get to the crease and get in control. And maybe there's an element of that with Robinson, that the big stage is a place where he's just got to calm himself and just get into a sort of nice feel for the game. And perhaps that is something that he's had to do, and maybe the breathing exercises might be a route into that.
So South Africa were 32 for 6 after Robinson's first 8-over spell. He'd taken 4 of those wickets. I suppose in a way they did quite well to get 118 then.
They did do well, yeah. And Jansen and Zondo, you know, stuck at it. They had a little partnership of, well, they doubled the score, I think, didn't they? And then Maharaj had a swing as well. So yeah, they showed a bit of fight in the lower order. I think England put down a couple of half chances.
Yeah, Folks missed one.
Folks missed one, and I think
to dip a little bit.
Yeah, he sort of swerved on him, and then Pope in a sort of four slip gully region also put one down to his left, I think. But yeah, South Africa showed a bit of fight there, and, you know, good luck to them. But, you know, 118 is not the sort of score that normally wins you a test match. I think I looked something up today and it was the lowest first innings score by a team in an oval test since 1948. You know, this is normally a good place for batting. So, bad start. They've kept themselves just about in the game, but they are behind at the moment. And as we say, they're going to have to find some runs from somewhere.
When you look at, you know, you've watched a lot of test cricket, you've obviously written books about it as well. When you look at batting techniques and you look at pitches like today, 32 for 6, what do you think? Do you think, wow, the bowling's incredible? Do you think the batting's terrible? Do you think the pitch is awful? What's your assessment?
Well, I think you'd know better than me, but I think the conditions were good for bowling. There was seam movement today.
But it wasn't 32 for 6, was it?
No, maybe not. But this may be where we go back to South Africa's lack of confidence in the runs. And like I say, losing
and
out.
And lack of playing as well, I suppose.
Lack of playing, yeah. Yeah, I mean, they've come here and played 4 red ball games, haven't they? They had one at Canterbury and then 3 test matches. They only batted once at Lords because they won by an innings. So, you know, you've got to find form straight away. And also, of course, they've made 4 changes to this 11 from the previous match. So, and those 4 guys, well, Jansen's come back in, but the others didn't play previously. So they're playing their first test of the series. And Zondo effectively was making his test debut, wasn't it? It was his first test innings. So it's the nature of international cricket these days. You come in absolutely stone cold sometimes.
We haven't mentioned Stuart Broad much. He took 4 wickets in the end today, relegated to first change. 4 wickets, which takes him to the same tally of test wickets as Glenn McGrath. So, actually, a remarkable performance, really, isn't it?
Yeah, and McGrath was somebody he modelled himself on. Another tall bowler, sort of metronomic. Could get on a run of wickets, which is obviously what Stuart Broad's been so good at. Broad bowled well at Old Trafford, where again he was kept waiting. I mean, there's been times he lost the new ball to Stephen Finn about 10 years ago once, and he didn't like that, and he took a lot of wickets as a result. So maybe there's something.
So it's a motivation tactic.
Yeah, I think it could be. Yeah, take the new ball off him and make him angry.
He was getting the crowd going again as well.
Yeah. Well, he's been good at that this summer. I think revving up the crowd is one of Broad's jobs, isn't it? Apart from being Nighthawk and all these other things he's doing. And he got a few runs at the end today, I think. Swung a couple of boundaries. There was talk before this match that Broad might retire. You know, we've been thinking that the end is coming for him and Anderson. It's not happened. And I think one of the reasons it's not happened is that they are really enjoying playing under McCullum and Stokes. It's re-energised two old dogs, really. They're still learning new tricks and the rest of it. And they're staying now until next summer, aren't they? They're going to try and finish with the Ashes.
Which, of course, is early in the series, or early in the summer, so that hadn't actually got that much longer to wait.
Well, it's about 9 months away. I think it's June and July, isn't it, the dates for the test matches, we think. Broad loves the Ashes, and he obviously intends to be around for it. So it's great. He is a good example of how this re-energised England team have found a new way of playing. And I think it's great when the old troopers, if you like, can start again and find a new, a fresh lease of life. And I think Broad's a brilliant example of that. And he's had a good summer.
Time for another shout out for our sponsor, IG. If you're investing for the future and want to put yourself in the best possible position to achieve the best possible outcomes, then you could do worse than considering investments from IG. Through IG's investing platform, you can pick from thousands of UK and international shares with low commissions and extended hours on dozens of major US stocks. You can also discover the potential of exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, which allow you to invest in the performances of a wide range of different sectors, regions, assets, and themes, like clean energy, electric vehicles, or AI. Or, if you'd rather leave it to the experts, you can choose from a number of ready-made, low-cost IG smart portfolios, each designed and managed for you in line with your preferred risk appetite. All options are available as a tax-efficient ISA with a SIP account coming very soon. To find out more, go to ig.com/investing, remembering that the value of your investments may fall as well as rise, and you may get back less than you deposit.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay, we'll talk about England's batting. So they bowled South Africa for 118, and you would think, even the pessimists amongst us would think, England would get a decent lead. Somebody was asking me how many will they be down at the end of play, and I said 4. They're 7 down. What did you make of England's batting?
Well, first thing to say is that South Africa do have a really good attack. They were outstanding at Lord's. England got blown away. They brought back Janssen, who was an element of that four-man attack there. So we shouldn't be surprised, really. The pitch has got enough in it for the faster bowlers. And as we know, the two openers, Crawley and Lees, have struggled. So the fact that they went cheaply, that's not a surprise. The disappointment was that the middle order, which is full of experience, even with Johnny Bairstow missing, that Pope, Root and Stokes didn't do better. Pope, in fact, played really well and got the only 50 of the match so far. But Root got in and then gave it away, sort of chasing a ball angled across him, carved it into the slips, where it was a good catch. But Stokes was just like the beans were jumping with him. He could, if he'd stayed in with Pope till stumps, you know, the game would be almost won, really, in many ways. But so it was disappointing that Root and Stokes got out in the way they did. Pope played well.
Yeah. So you're almost implying that Bazball can be good for some people and not necessarily for others. And just looking at someone like Alex Lees, who in one test looked purposeful and played pretty well, but here today, as with several of his innings, he tried a couple of biggish shots which I didn't think were that well judged and sort of got away with it, and then just bowled through the gate. I mean, not a very particularly difficult ball. Obviously, you know, a straight ball has a certain lethal quality, but you should get something in the way of it unless it moves dramatically. It seemed to me just got stuck. His front leg didn't move really, got a bit rigid, the ball just wriggled through. Crawley, well, he looked all right. How was he out? LBW. Again, it's sort of one of those dismissals where it was a good ball, but you've got to expect good balls in Test cricket, and you've got to be able to survive at least a few of them.
And I think in Crawley's case, he faced quite a few balls for not many runs, didn't he? And he's normally like to get put back to ball and get moving. At Old Trafford, he played well for 38, didn't he? Grafted. That was sort of out of character innings, really, against type. Maybe he was thinking of playing in a similar fashion here and just couldn't survive long enough. But he's sort of looking for a way to succeed at Test level, as is Lees, really. Crawley, we thought, was going to do it by being a dasher. More recently, he's perhaps tried to rein himself in, and now he's just caught in two minds as to exactly how he should be playing.
Where do you sit on the view of Ed Smith, the former Test selector who's produced this book, Making Decisions? And he says in the book that Crawley averages roughly the same as a number of other players that have been tried at number three or opening around about 24. So he's not doing any worse than about 12 other players who had that opportunity. But his ceiling, as in a double century that he produced against Pakistan, shows what he's capable of more than most of those other players. So there's a value in persevering with him.
Yeah, there's an interesting argument, and I know Ed's made this up for a while, and you know, it has some merit. A lot of these guys at the top of the order, batting at the top in international cricket is tough. You know, DRS has helped the bowlers. There are some very good new ball bowlers around. Pitches are often got a bit in them. A lot of these guys average 25, 30. But as he says, Crawley can score a double 100 or 100 occasionally and looks really good. And that's sort of the argument that McCullum has been putting forward as well, that we need to keep faith with Crawley because his potential is unusual. You know, he has stressed that Crawley can do things that other players can't. Well, it's not always obvious that he can do those things, but he did make a big double 100 against Pakistan. He did make 100 in the West Indies. He played really well in Sydney, I think, and got 70-odd. And, you know, was playing shots against Pat Cummins that most players don't play. So I can see the argument, but they are asking us to be very patient with Zach Crawley. And I guess until there's lots of alternatives in county cricket pushing themselves forward, they will continue to have faith thrown in.
One of which is Harry Brook, who of course made his Test debut today and actually looked, I thought, very composed. But replacing Johnny Bairstow in this match didn't last all that long. He made 12, so it's not a terrible start. It's not a duck or something. He faced 20 balls for that 12. There was some quite promising signs there, I thought. I know it wasn't a huge sample size, but
yeah,
I thought
he shaped quite well, I thought.
Yeah. What do you think?
Yeah, he shaped quite well. Defended his first ball, got Jansen away for a couple of offside boundaries for his first runs in Test cricket. And then he rather gave it away by sort of clipping one down to fine leg. They will make the same argument about Brook that they make about Crawley, that he's got a rare talent and he needs to be persevered with. How long he stays in the side partly depends on how long Johnny Bairstow is out, of course. But they do say, Stokes said earlier in the summer that, you know, Harry Brook will have a long Test career. I think he said he'll have a long England career in all three formats, is what he said. So they clearly believe in him. And great, you know, if they give these guys a long run, I think that probably is the best way to ensure that they fulfil their potential. But we may have to be patient.
As you know, our sponsors IG provide individual investors with the platform to build a portfolio by picking their own investments from thousands of international shares. So the question is, how well have these two teams been picking their shots? We can look at the shot selection today and probably say, Simon, that it wasn't all that good. If we look at the South Africans, for instance, Dean Elgar left a massive gate and was clean bowled by Robinson. A couple of good deliveries. Urvea got a pretty good one, actually, from Anderson, angled across him, caught behind. And I thought the same for Ryan Rickleton, who hasn't played much Test cricket, got a good delivery from Stuart Broad as well. Some of the latter shots, not so good. I remember Mulder having a big sort of slash outside off stump and getting caught behind off Robinson. And actually Jansen, who made the most runs in the innings, 30, he also got dragged into driving at a wide ball as well. He was dismissed, caught by Joe Root off Robinson for 30. So shot selection from the South Africans generally not great. What about England? What about Ollie Pope's batting, picking his shots? How did you see his innings?
Well, he played some terrific shots, I thought, really, and he really got the England innings moving along with Root. He played a couple of very powerful sort of pulls off the back foot through mid wicket. The square boundaries on this huge oval surface have got endless numbers of other pitches that are used for various county and club matches and the rest of it, and the ball travels across the surface like lightning. And he knows that he plays here, and I think Pope was quite happy to put some of these balls away square, and he did it very well. So I'd say he would have had quite a number of the top 10 shots of the day. You didn't mention Keegan Peterson, I don't think, in the South African innings, who left a ball and was bowled off stump, wasn't he? Shouldering arms. But
So that's picking your leave badly as opposed to picking your shot badly.
I think he'd had a couple of decent balls which he'd left. Wisely, and then he picked the wrong one to leave and was bowled. But Ollie Pope played some of the best shots of the day, I thought. And Harry Brook's first two boundaries were nice as well.
But then, I suppose it summed up the dilemma you have as a Test batsman, because you do need to score runs, and occasionally, I suppose, you need to take risks. And his first two scoring shots were excellent, but then he picked the third one to try and hit and lobbed it straight down long leg. So you could say that was bad shot selection.
Absolutely, it was. I mean, what's interesting about a day like today, with a bit of help in the pitch, was that both teams had probably four slips all day, I should think. So any batsman playing an attacking shot was by definition taking a risk, because if he doesn't get it quite right, there's a lot of guys waiting for the edge, and there were a lot of catches to the keeper and quite a few in the slips. So it was a high-risk day's cricket, really. So picking your shot was not easy.
So those were the shots of the day with IG. And to find out more, go to ig.com/investing. Right, Simon, I've got one more question for you. And I think you've been looking into this today. How many Test matches was the Queen alive for?
Well, I can tell you how many England played while she was the monarch. She came to the throne in 1952. England were playing a Test match in Chennai at the time, actually, when her father died. But 760 is the answer. England played under Elizabeth, out of about 1,055, I think. So that's pretty much three quarters of all England's Test matches were played under her. So we're back to the Kings now. And I have looked, actually, it's very sadly, I've looked at England's results under all of the monarchs. And I think they've done pretty well under Victoria and Elizabeth, and not so well under the Kings.
Interesting.
I think King George VI's win percentage was quite low. Yeah, 760 tests under Queen Elizabeth.
Wow, that's an amazing stat, isn't it? My mother told me today that she actually has lived through five monarchs, because she started with King George V, then it was Edward who abdicated, then it was King George VI, then it was Queen Elizabeth, and now obviously King Charles. She survived five, amazingly. It's an extraordinary story, isn't it? I mean, she wasn't that mad about cricket, I don't think, was she? But she came to Lords many times and met the players.
Yeah,
and there's a very funny sort of spoof clip of England meeting the Queen in about 1993. Graham Gooch is captain at the time, showing her along the line of players. And there's a spoof quip, I think probably Rory Bremner, mimicking Gooch's voice. And as the Queen comes to Bill Tufnell to shake hands, he says, "Mind your rings." I don't know whether Queen wore many rings when she was shaking hands with people on the outfield. But she was a presence. And the Duke of Edinburgh loved it, didn't he?
He did, and he played, didn't he? And she was at the centenary test in Melbourne in 1977, because I think she was on a royal tour of Australia at the time. So she attended that very famous match. I think she was she was interested enough to go to Lords test matches, I think, 20-odd times.
She, of course, actually was the only woman allowed in the pavilion, I think, for many years.
For many years, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Till about the mid-90s, actually. It was a sort of rare thing to see a woman sat in the committee room on one of those high chairs. Anyway, she's gone now, and I guess King Charles will be at Lords next summer for the Ashes.
Well, that's a nice thought, isn't it? That would be terrific if he came. I assume he would do. And I'm sure the Australians would love to see him there. So, yeah, that's a nice thought, really. But, it's been an emotional day, I feel.
Yeah, it's been a very emotional day. A kind of slightly madcap day on the field, and a very sombre but also celebratory day off it as well. And congratulations to everybody for the way it's been staged today, and the passion that everybody showed in that singing at the start. Okay, that's it for the day today. Anyway, with England 36 ahead, 3 wickets in hand, we'll resume tomorrow, Sunday, and Simon, hopefully you'll be back with us. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Podcast Network.